Herzlich willkommen zu Klassik Viral, dem Podcast gegen den immer noch grassierenden Corona-Blues. Mein Name ist Arndt Kobbers und ich freue mich sehr, meinen heutigen Gesprächspartner, den neuen Chefdirigenten des HR-Sinfonieorchesters, Alain Altinoglu. Ich habe gehört, Ihr Deutsch ist nicht gut genug für ein Interview, noch nicht. Mein Französisch ist nicht gut genug und vermutlich auch das vieler Hörer für ein vernünftiges Gespräch. So, let's switch to English. Well, first of all, your family name, you pronounce it French, you're born in Paris, but it seems to be a Turkish name, but I've heard you're Armenian. How does that put together?
You're absolutely right. Actually, I am born in Paris from Armenian parents who came from Turkey before I was born. And the family name 100 years ago used to be Altunian, which is the true name of our families. And during the war, the genocide, many Armenian names were changed to Turkish names. So Altunian became Altunoglu in Turkish. And of course, I'm French, so it's pronounced now in the French way, which is Altinoglu. But my mother tongue, even if I was born in France, is Armenian. So I always spoke Armenian at home. And sometimes my parents, when they didn't want my sister and myself to understand, you know, a secret, they would talk Turkish together. So that's why I learned also Turkish, hearing my parents trying to hide something from us. And then, of course, I went to school and I started to speak French, and I'm French, of course. So that's why the reason of my name.
But people like to categorize. Would you prefer then French-Armenian conductor?
No, I mean, you know, each culture has a different point of view of how to call people, how to categorize. The first time when I read something like French-Armenian, it's when I started to conduct in the United States. They are really used to speak like that about people. You know, they say French-Russian, French-Armenian. In France, it's not like that. We say, I am French with Armenian roots. And I like this idea because I'm really French in my way of, I was educated there at school. The music, I was educated there, even if there are, I will explain later, different things with my mother, etc. But I have this both culture because, of course, I was there in France, but my food sometimes was Armenian, etc., etc. So, yeah.
You have been chief conductor of the opera in Brussels, mm-hmm. La Monnaie de Mun, since 2016. Mm-hmm. You're still professor for conducting in Paris at the Conservatoire Supérieur. Mm-hmm. Why do you become now chief conductor here in Frankfurt additionally? And you're a guest conductor everywhere, so why
true.
This
it's a
job?
You know, in the life of a conductor, it's like if you had different type of jobs, because we think, okay, conducting is conducting, but conducting an opera is something really different than conducting a symphony repertoire. It's technically different. I would say that when you conduct in an opera, you are part of a big picture, you know. You have, of course, the singers, but you have the stage director, you have the bühne bild, everything. And you are a part of this big, big team, and everybody comes together to make this big thing happen together. The symphonic repertoire is a bit different. You are in the center of everything. I mean, of course, with the ego and everything of the conductor. But the music starts and finishes from you. You know, your interpretation. Of course, everybody, your job is to put all the musicians together. But that's the main difference. And then technically, it's very different. Mm-hmm. I always advise my students to try to conduct a lot of operas, because in opera, you always have a problem. It never exists a performance of opera which is 100% perfect, because you always have a tenor who is late, a soprano who doesn't want to come to stage. So you have many problems, and, you know, in the pit too. So technically, it's very difficult. And what you learn with singers, which means to take the breath with them, it helps a lot in the symphonic repertoire, and the opposite. The detail you learn to do with a symphonic orchestra, you can bring back. So it was very important for me to have these two poles in my life, these two things. So I've been for 5 years now, 6 years in La Monnaie, and now I'm so happy to start with HR this new adventure. Because also to have your own orchestra, you can also build your own philosophy of music, your own colors and your own way of doing it. And to be a guest dirigent like I do now with orchestras, it's something different, of course.
Mm-hmm. You're conducting all the big orchestras like Berliner Philharmonica, yeah. Wiener Philharmonica, Concertgebouw, mm-hmm. and La Scala, and mm-hmm. Covent Garden, Met, and so. What makes an orchestra a really top orchestra?
Haha, very good question. I think what makes a musician a top musician in general, it's very interesting. I think it's the ear, how you listen to the world outside of you. and how you listen to yourself also. And it's a combination of two things. Because if you are, for example, a violin player, you're at home, you play alone, and first of all, you have to listen to yourself. Why? Because you have to know if you play in tune, if it's too fast, too slow, it's thing. But then when you arrive in the orchestra, you look at the conductor, and at the same time, you have to look at your score, to listen to your neighbor, and to listen to the rest of the orchestra, and to react to know what you have to play. So it's a question of be aware, it's the awareness. And I think the quality of the top orchestras is this awareness of what's going on outside, you know, because they have the technical capacity to do that. And I think today, many orchestras have a very, very top level in the world. It's not like in the 50s, you know, you could really say, okay, there are three or four orchestras. Today, everybody is very strong. And I think the difference comes from this. And after, I could also see that each orchestra has different level due to their music director. The work that the music director does every day, every week, is super important to build the orchestra. And I could see in some orchestras, for example, when they didn't have a music director for 1, 2, 3 years sometimes, I could feel that the level of the orchestra was going down. And then when a new music director came, it went up. So it's also related to that. And of course, there are special orchestras like the Wiener Philharmonica. They mm-hmm. don't have a music director, mm-hmm. but it's their way of being, of course, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that's what makes the difference. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. These top orchestras, general orchestras, do they differ from each other, from the culture and whatever? But musicians now come from all over the world. They come from different colleges.
You are absolutely right. It's the advantage and the problem of today is the, in French we say, la mondialisation, which mm-hmm. means that, you know, the world becomes one, and which is a good thing because it means that the clarinet player in Frankfurt, he can listen to a clarinet player from New York, from Japan, everywhere. It's on YouTube, everybody can. And of course, it's the danger that every orchestra starts to play in the same way. And I think we should not. I think mm-hmm. each orchestra should keep his own identity. And it's still the case. Of course, there are instruments which are different. For example, a French oboe or a French clarinet, it's not the same instrument than a German clarinet. It's a different type of instrument, so the sound is different. When you go to Vienna Philharmonic, they have special horns, a special timpani. But then there are also the way of playing. And I think it's very important also as an interpreter that you respect the composer, the way Ravel, Debussy would never compose something like Strauss, Richard or Mahler. I think it comes from the culture, the language we speak, and what we call the rubato, the agogic, is different. And of course, each orchestra has to know the way the composer wanted, but to keep also his own identity. I like very much when I go to Chicago that they still have this brass thing, that in Vienna they have these strings, things, everything. And I think each orchestra has to keep his identity, if he has an identity, of course, because it depends on the orchestra.
But you would say the big orchestras have their own identity still.
Some continue to have, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it's important. Some become a bit,
Mm-hmm. But how far do you respect then, in a concrete thing now, if you come to Frankfurt, yeah? Mm-hmm. How important is the identity of the orchestra and the thing that you hear in your ear and you want to have
absolutely.
Them to sound?
I will take an extreme example to make it understand. When Herbert von Karajan was in the Berliner Philharmonica, there was a sound which could be called the Karajan sound, mm-hmm. which was not the same in the orchestra when other conductors came to conduct the Berliner Philharmonic, even in its time. And then when you listen to recording, even of Pelléas et Mélisande, French, or of course Bruckner, Wagner, or the other thing, you always hear this sound. So it was his sound. Now, today, I think in Frankfurt, the technical level of each musician is so high that you can ask them to change the colors, you know? And the identity of the orchestra, there is a core repertoire, of course. The orchestra is famous for his Mahler recordings, for, you know, Brahms, or his Austro-German repertoire. And when I go on the repertoire like French or Italian, then I explain to them, okay, how we do this rubato and how we do this agogic. So to try to go there. And it will never be an Italianish or the French orchestra, of course. Mm-hmm. But we have to be informed. It's exactly when Baroque orchestras, they play today in the style of, which is called now informed orchestras, even if we don't have the instruments of this period, we can know, okay, it has to be played this way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How do you change then this sound?
Conducting is something very, very strange to explain, you know. I teach, for example, in Paris, and I have 8 students, and each time, of course, they have to conduct the same piece, you know. Mm-hmm. Let's say they conduct Brahms too. And it's amazing that when they start to conduct on the podium, without saying anything, the sound of the orchestra is totally different for each student. Mm-hmm. 8 sound totally different. But what did they do? They didn't say anything. Mm-hmm. It's just the fact of being there with their own body, their own way of looking people. It's the sound is different, you know. And so some of them struggle to obtain the Brahms sound and they cannot achieve. Some of them do nothing and you already have this Brahms super sound. So there is something you cannot explain. It's something which alchemy or chemy between. Mm-hmm. And then as a conductor, you have to start from this point. You know, first point, you are here and you hear something. And in your head, you have the sound or the image, if you want to achieve. And what you hear is superposed in your brain with it. And then you start to say to the orchestra, okay, I would like this louder, softer. And I like to speak to the orchestra in terms of colors. I think it's very important. Or to say a story about it. And the orchestra has the capacity to technically change their way of playing to go to what I say, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't say always loud or, you know, soft, or because it would be boring, of course, as a conductor to say fast, slow. I mean, then you feel like a Kapellmeister or like say...
So you work with pictures and with ideas and with images.
Yeah, of course, images. And especially if the composer by himself fought with images. I think it's very important, yes.
Mm-hmm. But talking to the orchestra is important. I mean, there are conductors who say no, it should go by.
Yeah, it depends. I think you always have to react to what you have in front of you. I mean, if I conduct an orchestra, it's absolutely 100% what I want. Then I will not continue. I will stop and say, okay, perfect. Thank you very much. And then if it's not, then I have to find the right strategy for this orchestra at this time. Sometimes during a rehearsal, you feel that, okay, you can talk. And after 1 hour, people are so tired, you know, you think, okay, it's not time to talk now. It's just time to play. And you have to adapt yourself and to obtain the best result, of course. Mm-hmm. There is not one way of doing. I think you have to feel the way.
Mm-hmm. How fixed is your idea of a piece when you go into the first rehearsal?
Very fixed. I mean... very fixed in the way of because if the conductor comes in front of an orchestra and doesn't know really what he wants or expects the orchestra to give him ideas, I mean it's not possible. But of course there is also a kind of exchange between you and the orchestra. I experience this a lot in opera, for example, with singers. For example, you do Don Giovanni, okay, and then you have singers. They are all approximately in the same way of singing. And suddenly we have a baritone, you know, who sings very romantic, you know, with a lot of vibrato. So, of course, it's my job to tell him, be careful, you know, your colleagues, they sing with this way, which is a bit baroque side. So it's not homogeneous, you know, you have to homogenize. In the orchestra, it's the same thing. For example, sometimes in the orchestra, you have solo, you know, they play alone. And then I feel the musician give something to me, you know, that I hadn't thought about it, a bit more, a bit less. And then I have immediately to think, can it fit in my interpretation? Is it too much, not too much? Oh, it's a good idea. If I feel it's a good idea, then I keep it, of course, you know? Because I don't think that there is only one way of interpreting the music. You know, there are 100 ways of doing it. Mm-hmm. It's like reading a poem. Mm-hmm. You can say a poem like 100 ways. But of course, it has to be homogeneous with the rest of the interpretation. Mm-hmm. So if a musician gives me something which I think it's okay, I keep it, of course. It's fixed and not fixed at the same time. Mm-hmm.
So if you do a piece with the Frankfurt Orchestra and with the Berlin Orchestra or with Paris Orchestra, it will sound differently.
Of course, it sounds differently, but it will be quite close. It's interesting when I listen to my recordings of different orchestras, the tempi are quite close. It's different. But what I said like before, I like also to keep the identity, you know. I did some pieces, for example, with Vienna, Berlin, Paris, and each time tempi are are quite the same, the way of raising, and the sound is a bit different because you have different people playing. But I would say it's a new constellation each time. You know, you have stars in the orchestra, but you know, like if, when you look at the sky, it's always stars, you know, you look at, but it's different constellation, you know, and it's the same with the orchestra.
It's very often the way that a conductor works with an orchestra or has been working for several years and says, well, that's the orchestra and that's the idea and that's the sound, so I would like to have and I wanted to have. And so, and then he stops and then another one comes and says, oh, now we have to begin from the ground and we're going to this. Isn't it very frustrating that you have an orchestra and it is like you wish and then comes the colleagues the
no,
next?
No, but I think also it's interesting for the musicians to have this different kind of interpretation. That's also the big problem of our job in art. You know, when you look, when you go to a museum to look at a picture by Leonardo da Vinci or Manet or Picasso, I don't know, the picture is already there. So you look at it and you appreciate or not, and through your own experience, your life. Music is something totally different. It's just a paper, you know, and you have notes on it. And then what? And today especially, not many people can hear in their head what they read, so it's your job. And I think it's the most important part of my job to be a medium between the composer and the public. So that's why I read a lot about the composer wishes and how he was. And if he's from the 20th century, we are lucky because we have also some recordings, Debussy playing the piano, Ravel conducting, Bartok playing, so we have some things that we can listen and, okay, of course it's more difficult for Mozart or Haydn because it was such a, but you have to be in these lives and also talk with people who have the tradition, you know. When I go to Vienna, for example, I love to talk with old teachers and what they know about the tradition, who comes from Schubert or everything, and in Paris it's the same. And then I have to give to the public what I think was the idea of the composer. And then comes a big problem of interpretation. I think one of the first who talked about the subject was Furt Wengler about the subject. So when a composer in the 19th century says Lebhaft or says Schnell, you know, is the Schnell of the 19th century is the same Schnell of 2021? Probably not. The life is totally different, you know. We didn't have planes, trains, cars, everything. But the wish of the composer is to give a feeling of Schnell. So maybe the Schnell of today is faster than the Schnell, but I think it's important to adapt yourself to the time you are. So an interpretation, I think, cannot be fixed. That's why I think when you listen to great conductors during their life, sometimes the recording of the beginning, it changes with the life, and later it's slower or faster. It's not that they are, because some people say, okay, he's older, so it's slower. I don't think it has to be with that. It has to be more with your own personality, your experience, what you lived, and the time where you live. And sometimes you have the opposite. Furt Wengler was slower, but Claudio Abbado, for example, at the end, sometimes it was faster than before. He was more informed in Mozart, for example, the way of conducting. So the interpretation depends on the composer, but also the time when you live. And that's the difficult thing. Yeah.
You said it once and now that conductors can read music like a book. Mm-hmm. Is it really like that? Can you?
Depends of the conductors, but...
with you.
Yeah, it's our job, of course, we read. And of course, sometimes when it's extreme, you cannot hear it. There is a famous story that Gustav Mahler said to Schoenberg that there was a score so modern that he could not hear in his head, even Mahler, which is, of course, was a so great genius. Of course, sometimes when you have a new vocabulary, which is very modern with things like, it's more difficult. But for the classic music, it's our job to listen. But we haven't started at 6 years old to immediately hear a Mahler symphony in our head. You know, it goes very slowly. First in your head, you hear one line, two lines, and then the instruments, and yeah, and it's the only way. But, you know, before, I mean, 100 years ago, people knew better to read the music. There is a funny story with Florent Schmidt that I conducted here in Frankfurt last year. There was a journalist, a critic, music critic, was asked, what did you think about this piece? And the critic said, oh, I'm sorry, because I haven't received the score and I could not study it. Which means that in this time, music critics could read the score and study the score from, you know, there, which I think today there are not so many people who can do that. But of course, it's our job to do that. Yeah, of course.
But isn't it nicer if you really hear the music in your head, just to hear it there, than from other people who do it maybe in a different way than you would like to?
It's a very interesting question. I'm also a pianist, for example, and that's the big difference between conducting and playing yourself an instrument. You don't have this, I would say, even this sensual feeling of, you know, making the music. You know, you touch the piano or you touch the violin. You just are in the air and the music is produced. But I can tell you that the vibes you received in front of an orchestra are so strong and so that you feel fed by this, you know. Of course, it's a bit strange that you have, and especially when you are in the public, you see this guy or this lady moving and what is it for? I mean, it's grinning. But it really has an impact and it really changes the sound and I don't feel any frustration. Of course, it's different when I play myself the piano because it's more concrete, maybe, or sensual, as I said. But there is no frustration. I really have the feeling that, you know, it comes from us together.
But you said when you go into the first rehearsal and you have a very fixed idea of about a piece, and then maybe you listen to a solo or some whatever and said, wow, that's an interesting idea. Mm-hmm. So how is it at the end of a concert then? Would you say that was normally your interpretation, or was it partly
course.
Yours, partly from the orchestra?
How much
can you really...
It's difficult to say. I mean, it depends on the time of rehearsals you had. I think the rehearsals are a place very interesting where you build together with the musicians a code, you know, of, okay, this... For example, you say this place should sound like this and this place. And then comes the concert. And I like also to keep for the concert a kind of, not improvisation because it's too much, but a reaction to the instant, you know, to what is going on, maybe with how you feel, how is the public and everything. And that's why I learned also with opera, you know, when you do, for example, 15 performances of Tosca or 20 performances of Zauberflöte every day, you cannot do it. You are not the same every day, so it has to be. So during the rehearsals with the orchestra, we built a kind of code, okay, what is it? And then during the concert, it changes. But of course, you can say it's the interpretation of the conductor, because if it was another conductor, it would be a totally different way of doing the music.
But you have the feeling that most things happen what you try to do.
I mean, I hope.
I mean, there are 90 individuals.
When it doesn't happen, it's an accident, you know. Mm-hmm. It can happen, you know. Everybody, we are just human beings, and that's why it's so exciting. Mm-hmm. If it was robots, you know, it would be not funny or interesting. We have human beings. They can do mistakes. They can play too loud, too soft. Mm-hmm. So it's just part of the mystery of the music.
Mm-hmm. I think that you became chief conductor of the La Monnaie. Mm-hmm. That was the first chief conductor post for you.
I was a guest conductor, as guest conductor, a bit before in the south of France, in Montpellier. That was the end of the 2007-8. But it was my first position. Yeah. For many years, I wanted to be freelance, you know, to go everywhere, so I could see how they were. Doing the music, you know, East Europe, North Europe, America, everywhere. And then at the point I felt, okay, it's time for me to have my own orchestra.
It's very late for conducting.
Yeah, absolutely. But I also started quite late to conduct compared to some colleagues, you know. The very, very first time I conducted, I think I was 25 years old, which is sometimes you see baby conductors, you know, they start 12. You know, Lorin Mazel, for example, he was so young. And you have. Yeah. So I started quite late and
But was it really that you wanted to become, or you were a pianist?
Yeah, no,
and
no.
That you stepped in a rehearsal?
No, not at the beginning. When I was 12, 13 years old, I loved the sound of orchestra. My grandfather gave me some scores, very old scores of Beethoven symphonies. And you're so old that I had to be very careful when I turned the pages because they were collapsing. And so I was listening to these recordings. Oh, I loved it. And then my sister was also a piano player and I started to make transcriptions from orchestra for four hands. And I remember when I was 13, I spent like 6 months to do a transcription of the Beethoven Sixth Symphony Pastoral for four hands. Wow. I was very proud, so we played. And fortunately, 3 months later, I discovered that Franz Liszt, he did for two hands and much better. So it was for me a bit of a shock. But so I loved the orchestra sound. And then later, when I was 16, I needed, for family reasons, to earn money. So I found a way. And I found this job of co-repetitor, very rare, for operette. I was 16. Oh. And I started to play for operettes. And then I started to accompany singers, blah, blah, blah. And then I became co-repetitor in Paris Opera, Châtelet. I was invited even to Salzburg as a French coach. And then in Paris Opera, they asked me if I wanted to be assistant of the conductor for a contemporary new piece on the Kafka's process. It was a new piece by Manoury. And one day there was a Bühne Orchestra probe, and the chief conductor didn't come to the rehearsal because his wife was giving birth in the hospital. And the director asked me, please conduct. Oh, really? Okay. So I was 25. I never had any lesson of conducting in my life, but I knew the score. And I was in front of the orchestra and I conducted. And I discovered that, okay, that's my thing. I love it. And the musicians were very supportive. Maybe that day, if the musicians said to me, you know, oh no, we have to stop, it's catastrophic, you know. No, but, and then it started. I was 25 and it started like that. Mm-hmm. And then I said, okay, I want to be a conductor. Mm-hmm.
But in your biography, it sounds like you really studied it then. Did you then?
Studied? I studied?
Yeah.
No, I never studied conducting. No.
Oh,
never.
Okay. Then never. You studied piano at the
I studied piano, of course, but never studied conducting, which was a bit a problem for me when I started to be a teacher, because I never had a teacher myself, so I had to invent this new way of being. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but now you're a professor for conducting.
Exactly. So,
First of all, the question is, why do you spend time for that? I mean, you could travel around and
conduct. It's one of the most important thing for me. I think we have the responsibility as musicians to give to the new generation the keys, the experience, what we know, and so they can go maybe faster than we did. And pedagogy is super important for me. And it's the same with the orchestra when we do concerts for young people. It's another way, you know, to bring the classic music to people and to explain what is an orchestra. It's so important for me. And also, I received so much from the Paris Conservatoire as a student, not in conducting, but in piano, analyse, accompagnement. Mm-hmm. I was 16 when I started, and I still remember my teacher of, I was in a class of lead, you know, accompaniment. Mm-hmm. And she had a little office and she opened the door and there were like hundreds of scores. And she said, you can take the score you want and you bring it back the week after. And what's that? And I discovered composers that I never heard in my life before. Duparc, Henri Duparc. Oh, what's that? I opened, it's amazing. So, and now I think I have the responsibility in Paris Conservatoire also to give back what I received from there.
But is it really useful for a young musician to study conducting? Isn't it like you need a course and then practice?
No, of course, because I said I didn't have a teacher, but I studied a lot by myself. Mm-hmm. I read hundreds of books. I looked, and as a co-repetitor, I could speak a lot with conductors I was working for. And I was very lucky. I worked with very, very great conductors, you know, like Pierre Boulez, Mazel, everything. And it was great. And also I worked with very bad conductors, you know, and then I could also learn what I should not do if I become a conductor. And, you know, I have students and they are all different. You know, you have a young conductor who is has knowledge incredible. You know, he read all Marcel Proust and everything. But when he's on the podestre, on the podium, he's so shy, you know. So my job as a professor to help him to develop his personality, to be strong in front of him. And sometimes I have a student who's like a lion on the podium, you know, he can eat everybody. But when you speak about Beaubarchais or, you know, he doesn't know what's that. So you have to give him the books he has to read. And so my job is very different, depends on the students. So you can really learn. And conducting is a lot of different topics. It's not only jazzistic, it's not only knowing the composer to analyze, but very many different orchestration, organology, and all these things. Sociology, very important. Psychology, so important. How you speak to a group, what you say, what you should say, not say. And in the orchestra, you don't speak the same way to a group of geige and to a solo trumpet or posaune, or it's different. So all these things you can learn, of course, mm-hmm. absolutely.
But you can learn it at a high school, at a conservatoire.
Yeah, yeah.
Wouldn't you recommend learn a piano or learn an instrument and then do correpetitor or assistant or whatever and learn by doing?
Yeah, of course. It's very, before starting conducting, it's important, I think, to play at least one instrument. But I also try to play the violin and the, you know, different things. It's important to have but my violin, it was a catastrophe, so I stopped. But at least I know what it is. And then, of course, before starting the conducting, you have to learn harmony, contrapunt, fuga, everything, mm-hmm. of course. And of course.
Mm-hmm. Would you say it's a good thing to begin as conductor if you can play the piano, and mostly the piano, as a first instrument and not an instrument which is played in the orchestra?
Of course, there are a lot of conductors who used to be pianists or organists, because it's an instrument that helps a lot if you want to play a score, to hear everything at the same time, the harmony, the rhythm, and the melody, which is not possible with a cello or a tone. But if you are a conductor, you are supposed to hear everything in your brain. So that's the principal instrument for conductors, mm-hmm. it's the brain. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting because I did a TV show in France last year, and they put my head in a, how to say in English, IRM, mm-hmm. a scanner, a mm-hmm. machine mm-hmm. that went in my brain to see everything. It was so interesting that they tried to see where was the music in my head.
And they found it?
No, they found it. Usually you have the language on one side and the music on the other side. And they saw that the French language in my brain is not only left, but is also on the right side, because the music took the place on the left side and the music is everywhere now. So it said it's good for you, because if you have a big problem like a stroke, you will not lose totally your speaking, because it's also a bit on the other side, which mm-hmm. was very interesting. So I understood that I started to learn music so young, and I started to read the music before I could read the letters when I was 5. So in my brain, the music took a place instead of the language. That's why maybe for me today, it's quite difficult to learn new languages, because everything is already taken there. But it's very interesting to see. And then they asked me also to think I'm conducting the Coriolan, Beethoven Ouverture, and to see what happens. And it's amazing, because when it's fortissimo and when you have to give a lot of thinking, you see, really, even if there is no music, we think about it, and in the brain you see that it's red, you know. Yeah. So there is really something happening in the mm-hmm. head. It's our instrument.
You're still giving concerts as a pianist?
Yeah, not so much, a little bit, but sometimes I play concert with orchestra. I have a limited repertoire with a Mozart concert, Gershwin, mm-hmm. Rhapsody.
But why is it important for you? I mean, isn't it still hard work to do it really as a professional and really?
Yeah, no, concerts. But I mean, I don't have enough time to practice. That's a problem. And so when I need to do camera music or something, I practice before, of course. But it's difficult. You can work on your orchestra scores in the train, on the plane. Piano, it's more difficult, of course.
Well, last topic. How do you compose or put together a program for one season, especially for the first season if you get to a new orchestra?
As a music director, I mm-hmm. think it's important that you have a wide range of repertoire, because you are here to not build the orchestra because it's already built, but to give the main rail mm-hmm. on what you want to go. So when I'm here in Frankfurt during the years, of course, I want to do a garage repertoire, which is, of course, Italian, French, Russian. And so I try to have a mixture of all this and to have a great balance between the big masterpieces, very famous, and also new pieces composed for us, and things which are less known, because I want also to the public and orchestra to discover new pieces. So it's a balance in between all this, and pieces that are strong, for my heart. So I try to make a balance between that. And then each concert for me has to have a homogeneity, you know, mm-hmm. a topic, which is, you know, I don't know, the composers, they know each other, or the subject, you know, so it can be different. And that's the way I built programs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's not now for the next year's one big cycle or so. This orchestra is famous for this. Mahler cycles, these two cycles.
No, I don't do a cycle this year, mm-hmm. maybe next seasons, but mm-hmm. This year is, And you know, with the COVID, it's also a bit difficult now mm-hmm. to know what's going to happen. We, mm-hmm. of course, all wish that it's going to be better and better. And mm-hmm. so, we try to do the maximum mm-hmm. for that.
Mm-hmm. And the guest conductors, choosing the guest conductors, is that your job? And is that...
No, I mean, there is a music chef here. It's Michel Traub. Of course, we talk together and we have a super collaboration together and very open. And of course, if something he says to me, okay. I mean, it's an exchange and of course... But of course, if there is somebody very not good, and I think this is also a trust between the orchestra and the management, very important. The management, for example, invites a guest conductor, and because he heard about him or her somewhere, and then the orchestra loves him very much or her, and okay, come back. But then the orchestra, if it doesn't like, it doesn't match, then we don't invite him or her again. I mean, it's just trust like that.
But is it important to give the orchestra new impulses or so by guest
conductors? Yeah, I think it's like...
Maybe an idea that you can't, or because you're from a different...
Like, yeah, like it's old a new music impulse, or whatever, of course, or? And it's like in life, you know. For example, when you're in a couple... It's very, very difficult to have... I'm married for 25 years, so it's now it's okay. But to have... Sometimes you need impulses in life to change things. And in an orchestra, it's like that, you know. After some years, you have fresh, you know, need. And that's what is good in the higher symphony orchestra. We have musicians who are very experienced, and you have also new people coming, and it's this exchange is super important.
Was it difficult to put the program together for their first concert as a chief conductor? How did you do that?
I thought it's important to start with something which is close to me. Of course, I'm French, so the French repertoire, I grew up with it. So it's nice to start with it, I think. And a big piece for the orchestra. And of course, Symphonie Fantastique came immediately in mind because it's Berlioz is totally crazy. At the same time, a lot of... there is this big theme of love, you know, for this... a young lady he loved very much, and the orchestra can show a lot of colors and different things. So I thought it was super important. And then we wanted a very important, strong, and famous, and beautiful soloist. So we found with Zimmermann, who is Frank-Peter Zimmermann, is an amazing violinist. And I thought the first part could be a bit more 20th century. And Berg is, of course, one of the masterpieces. And we had to have also a world premiere for this concert. And unfortunately, we had to cancel. And it's postponed to the next season because I thought it was good. But it was a bit like that now. And no, it was not especially difficult, I think. Maybe it's more difficult to find the right piece to finish than to start the relationship with the orchestra.
But is that part of the fun programming?
Yeah, I think it's very, very interesting, yeah. And I like very much to think about it and to find the right balance. And I already came to Frankfurt as guest conductors with new pieces, and I felt that orchestra was very happy to discover things that they didn't know, like Rimsky-Korsakov or Schmidt, or things that they didn't know. And I think it's important, yeah, to have this fresh thing.
Two last questions. Do you think Saint-Germain will... finally win the Champions League with Messi?
Do you know about Paris Saint-Germain? Did you ask the question because you know or you don't know?
No, I know that you're a fan of
Saint-Germain. You know that I'm a fan of
Saint-Germain. Yeah, I read that.
And I even live like 200 meters from the stadium, you know, very well. So, of course, it's a big, big event for Paris to have Messi. But while I'm talking to you now, we have a big problem with another great player, which is Mbappé. So we are not sure if he's going to leave for... Madrid or no, so we'll see.
I haven't heard.
But of course, the team is so strong now. I mean, this team should win everything. I mean,
Have won last year and the
didn't. That was the thing. But now with Lionel Messi, he's a legend. I mean, and we never had. I mean, we had strong people like Ibrahimovic or things like that, but Ronaldinho. But Messi is something else. I mean, it's really a legend. Mm-hmm. So, but I really look forward to see him. Yeah.
So we'll see. And very last question, if the Corona blues or another blues comes over you and you feel a bit down maybe, is there any music to play or to listen to where you know it gives me energy and then I'm well off again?
Against the Corona blues. You mean classic music? You mean
whatever. Something that you know, if I listen to this, then I'm happy again or have energy again, good mood.
What do I listen? It's a good question. Let me think about it. No, I know what I listen when I'm in a Corona mood. For example, when I'm nostalgic, sad, I love to listen to Bill Evans, you know, Waltz for Debbie, which is very famous, and it's nostalgic, and I love his piece. So it's, but the opposite, let me think about it. Earth, Wind and Fire.
Oh yeah.
You know this
yeah,
band.
Yeah, of course I know.
It's so energetic and yeah, and, it wakes me up and I'm very yeah. It's a well, very yeah, strong thing.
Yeah, thank you very much for
thank
this
conversation.
Thank you very much. Und danke fürs Zuhören.
Danke.